You know I love you so bad, I don't believe in love. You know I love you so bad, so bad. You know I love you so bad, like the kid in the back of the classroom who can't do the math 'cause he can't see the blackboard so bad.
Hey everybody, this is Vassals of Kingsgrave, an offshoot of an offshoot of a podcast of Ice and Fire. And today we are going to be discussing the Netflix series Sex Education. My name is Bina 007. I'll be your host tonight. And later on, hopefully, we'll be joined by Mary Nymeria, making her way back from a restaurant. But I'm also joined by Noah.
Hi, guys. Pops AA on the forums.
And by Jock.
Mando Jock, you on the forums.
Fantastic. So the series we're talking about is Sex Education. It was released this year. It is written by and created by someone called Laurie Nunn, who I don't think had had a massive hit beforehand. So this is the golden age of TV where even if you don't have much of a track record, you can get a whole bunch of money. I'm just looking at the IMDb page. Basically, had done a short called Gone to Earth, a short called Radiance, and Pregnant Pause, which is a short, and suddenly got a contract to do this series. So it came out of nowhere, heavily trailed, front page of Netflix, and did stand out. Stars Asa Butterfield, who's done a whole bunch of films, including, well, I suppose most famously, that weird, what was that sci-fi one he did where everyone thinks it's homophobic, so we're not allowed to talk about it?
Ender's Game.
Ender's Game, that's the one. But he's like a very famous child actor. And Gillian Anderson of X-Files fame, which I'm sure she hates me saying, as his mum. He's a teenager, he's going through school, his mum's a sex education therapist, much to his great embarrassment, with a vivid sex life. He, however, cannot have a wank, and it's all about his friends at school just going through their dating lives and what's going on. He starts dispensing sex advice at school for money because the cool girl needs money because her parents are feckless. And that's basically it. So how did you guys, let's do lemon cake ratings. What would be our lemon cake equivalent for Sex Education?
I loved it. I'll give it a big old eight and a half, maybe.
Really?
Yeah, I loved it.
Yeah, I loved it. Why are you docking the point and a half?
No, I'm adding a point. 8.5.
Out of 10. What are we out of?
Out of 10, yeah.
Yeah, so you're docking a point. Why isn't it not a perfect 10, is my question.
I don't know. Maybe the classic Ross and Rachel thing is present in the show a little bit.
Yeah, that is a bit of a cliche between Maeve and...
Yeah.
Yeah.
That was a bit frustrating.
The other thing I thought was frustrating is having this sort of very polished kind of I just want, like, you know, no strings attached sex mum falling for the rugged plumber who makes her chicken soup. That was a cliche too. I'm going to be the same. I'm going to be 4 out of 5, 4.5 out of 5, because I think for the same reasons I really loved it, but there were certain things that were sort of a little bit in the genre. Jock, how about you?
I think I'm in the same sort of ballpark, like sort of 4 out of 5 sort of thing. We could have easily just gone into a sort of sexual problems of a week sort of drama, but they didn't and focused on sort of character developments. I dock a point because the lockers in the hallways between classrooms are not complying with British fire safety standards.
But actually, that brings us into an interesting thing, because I was watching this and I had no frame of reference, and I was like, where is this set again? Is this England? They all have English accents, but it feels like a very American school because none of them have school uniform, and they have lockers and they have proms and stuff, which I suppose British schools have now, but I'm old, so I didn't. And then it just does feel very much like it's made to be in this kind of like middle fantasy land where current contemporary teenagers are in a John Hughes movie. Like, it just felt like all the tropes, all the things that it was doing were very consciously about things that happened when I was at school, and all the music is really 80s as well, so that was weird for me. And because I'm old, I'm like, is this what a kid's into the 80s now? Am I so old that my childhood is now like a retro thing that cool kids would do? I don't know, help me out, guys. You're younger than me, is that like a thing?
Too colourful.
Go on, Jock.
Well, it's far too colourful for, like, at least my skill, but my skill to a certain extent was the moved.
It's a very heightened reality, isn't it?
Yeah,
definitely.
Everything's vivid and so forth, except the bathroom for some reason.
But how do you feel about that kind of Americanization of a British experience?
I like
yeah,
it.
Yeah, it did find it quite weird.
I think it's a good play on how big American culture is in our lives, maybe, and how things, you know, you could live our lives through that sphere. I don't know.
I wonder if it's also is it a Netflix thing where it just makes more money if it's in a sort of like mid-Atlantic, transatlantic in between space, and is it just a comment on the fact that we all watch so many rom-coms and so many kind of we grow up on these American high school things, so
yeah,
we expect our TV to be in those tropes rather than watching Grange Hill or whatever the British equivalent is.
Well, to be fair, it's kind of the way the show is structured and overturning the sort of stereotypes found in American high school dramas.
But is it, though? Is it really overturning them? Because, you know, there are so many John Hughes films and so many, like, TV shows, which is about, like, the geeky kid who kind of gets a cool makeover and ends up with a cool girl and in the cool crowd. I mean, that to me seems very standard. And then what happens when the newly cool kid alienates his old geeky best friend who feels left out, and then they have to have a last act reconciliation?
Well, excluding the main characters, like, you have like the jock with anxiety problems and the blonde with a heart of gold as sort of stereotype. Like,
absolutely. I'm thinking of that awful movie She's All That, which is jock with like inner life and trauma. Yeah, I don't know. There was a lot of Property Porn, though. I think they filmed it somewhere in Pembrokeshire or Wales, and it's absolutely beautiful. I want the house, the bum's house.
Like Wales.
Yeah, yeah, really stunning.
Yeah, South Wales, yeah.
Right. Hey, guys.
Hey, Mary. How many?
I want the mum's house, too.
Wonderful. How many lemon cakes out of either 5 or 10 would you give this series?
All right. I don't know your ratings. That's a bit tough. Let's see. 4. Yeah, 4 out of 5.
Yeah, you were in the wheelhouse. That's what every all gave it. Why are you docking at a point?
I loved it. I really loved it. Like, I was really, really into it. And I was frustrated by the ending. And the more and more, I mean, I was really into it, but I also felt like it was working a bit too easily. Like you were just saying, like, it's actually, you feel like it's going to be very different, and you have the impression it's really different. And when you think about it, it's kind of the same story as it is in a lot of TV shows, but it worked. And basically, Otis is just a really, really, really fun character. I really enjoyed knowing him. Yeah,
I agree. So let's do this sort of character-led or storyline-led. So let's start with Otis. How do you think he works as a lead protagonist, and in particular Asa Butterfield? Because he hasn't done that many comedy roles. If you look at most of his roles, they're very, very earnest characters that he typically plays. And I thought he was really light and engaging. I really loved him in this. I think this could be a breakout for him. But how did you guys find the Otis character? Was he believable? Was he credible? Was his transformation into kind of like semi-cool person hanging out with Maeve too easy?
I think she just found someone she could profit from initially. So that's how it seems easy, maybe. But I think he was great. Thought he was very convincing.
Yeah,
I agree. It was just... the way everything about sex just makes him so uncomfortable was really, like, really believable. And I found his character really, really fascinating, and really, he was great in it. Like, I really got attached to him, and
yeah,
it was moving. Yeah,
I agree. I really rooted for him. I think he's an amazing mm-hmm. actor. If any of you want to see him in a totally different, very serious part, he was in a film last year called Journey's End, which is a World War One film where he plays a very idealistic young officer sent to mm-hmm. the trench warfare in France, and he is amazing in it. It's a really great performance. Otis is great. What a great name too. Mm-hmm. The actor who I'd never heard of before, who blew me away though, was his best friend Eric, played by, I hope I pronounce this correctly, Nkuti Gatwa. who apparently has been in two episodes of Stonemouth and then one episode of Bob Servant, so hasn't been in much, but I thought he was so amazing as the best friend character and had one of the most powerful storylines with the homophobic slash trans, not transphobic, what's when you cross-dress? That's a different word. Anyway,
drag queens.
Yeah, basically experiences a really horrific, brutal attack. Mm-hmm. But just again, when he's funny, he's so funny. The way he dresses when he goes to the party and he's all in his, I mean, just so great. He was my favorite character. I don't know about you guys. Any thoughts on the Eric character and also how that storyline was handled? How did you find it? Because that's serious stuff.
Yeah, I loved his relationship with. Well, not. I love the scenes with him and his dad. I thought they were very, very strong.
Yeah.
Especially the one when he drives him to the party and they have that scene outside.
Yeah.
Just how he had to hide himself, and he's, you know, yeah, it was a strong, powerful scene.
I agree. There's something very beautiful, beautifully captured about the difference between the first and second generation immigrant, that the first generation immigrant probably feels more pressure to assimilate, but the second generation feels they can be more flamboyant and stand out and be themselves. But then the dad is still trying to give him the wisdom to say, look, I'll try and protect you, but this is going to have consequences. Beautifully done. I was a bit shocked when they did that scene, because the series had been quite light, even though Maeve's got some serious issues at home. I wasn't prepared for something as dark as that, or as meaningful, as pleasantly surprising. Mary, Jock, anything on the Eric character?
Well, I quite agree with both of you. He was, like you can, is he is the only reason why I didn't love everything Otis did and thought fully, because I was like, that's not cool, man. Yeah. But yeah, he's like, yeah, you realize that Otis is kind of forgetting about him, and that's not all right. But I thought that it's powerful stuff, and it's like hard subjects, which were like, they were not there for comic relief. They were not there, like, it was very well, like, they did this well, because it's not like too hard to watch, but it's still important stuff. So and there's still some light, it's still quite light around this, so it's a good balance, I think.
In the episode where where it's his birthday, I can't remember, I think 7, and Otis misses the bus, and remember that initially he gets to the bus stop and I'm getting off track. They deal with so many things in such a short space of time. Like, they deal, you know, they've got their clinic thing about I don't know what you call it, like body shaming, where they're going to send that picture around.
Oh yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And they're dealing with that on the one hand, and then the other half, you know, the episode split is with Eric having to deal with this, you know, losing his best friend, and also dealing with the abuse that he gets, and also getting his stuff stolen.
Yeah, it's intense. It's really densely written, isn't it? Yeah. It's like, there's so much going on.
Yeah, it felt very intense. I binged it as well, and I think it was just I couldn't stop watching it, because it was so, the emotions were so strong.
Yeah, I binged it too. Did everyone else binge it?
Yeah.
I watched it over two nights. It was just, yeah, I just wanted to know.
Exactly.
And then the other main character is Maeve, who basically is played by an actress called Emma Mackay. And whoever did the casting for this deserves an award, because not only did the guy who played Eric not really in much before, Emma Mackay's only been in one TV movie before now. Looks like Margot Robbie's little sister, everyone comments.
Yes.
I loved her, because she is in that tradition of the ballsy sort of outsider, which I think is also a genre cliche. The only thing that I kind of found weird about her character is she's got such an incredibly posh voice for someone living in a caravan, but maybe that's my class prejudice, I guess. But I found it really jarring.
Well, I think you get the impression she wasn't always living there.
True.
Maybe
true
that. The house at one point. I think she was my favourite character. She was great. Dealt with everything so well. Smart and tragic at this, you know, at the same time.
Yeah.
Is it a disturbing cliche, however, of the fragile, broken, manic pixie dream girl who uses sex in a kind of disposable manner? too closed off for the proper relationship that her jock boyfriend wants. I mean, I really loved her character, but when I stopped watching it after about a week, I was like, I have seen that manic pixie dream girl a lot.
Yeah, that's very true. And yet she was very believable, and it was easy to relate to her. Mm-hmm. Even though you kind of realize you've seen her before. She's kind of a cliche, but everything is just done very well. Like the scene at the abortion clinic, everything around that. It's just it's both light and very very hard. Like it's harsh subjects.
Mm. Like that her parents are dealing with addiction and and she's dealing with extreme poverty. I think you're right. And actually, the more and more I think about this, the more I think it's almost like Laurie Rose, the writer, said, you know what, I'm going to take every single normal genre cliche and put it in there, but show that you can actually create believable characters around them.
Yeah.
Which is kind of cool. Jock, how did you feel about Maeve?
I seem to have a weird association where she reminded me of Patsy of the Mad Lab.
Brilliant.
But other than that, she's a pretty good character throughout.
Okay, so I guess those are the three main characters. Maybe have a chat about the high school jock whose dad is the headmaster, who is sent off to military school. He's kind of like a figure of fun at the start because he's got sort of impotence problems. But he then has, again, this really intense scene with Eric where he ends up kissing him, which I thought was kind of like a really interesting kind of character development. How do you feel about him, Adam Groff?
Yeah, that's the one part I was just less convinced about. I mean, why do you have to make the guy like the jock who has emotional problems and who's not quite able to really connect emotionally with his girlfriend, and then you make him repressed gay? That was just a bit like maybe a bit too much. But it was a powerful scene, just not as believable as the rest of it, I guess.
I kind of did find it believable, but it just sort of felt weird being in this particular TV series because the context of this show is a world where everyone at the school is remarkably open about their sexuality in a way that I hope is true of contemporary schools. Certainly wasn't the case when I was in school. But, you know, whether you're having sex or not having sex or whether you're gay or straight or whatever, it's all very open. So I was kind of like, would it be credible that if he was questioning that he wouldn't be able to just be out because, you know, one of the most popular kids in the clique in school is gay. So it just struck me as in this context of a world that's very open and accepting, it was weird that he'd be so in the closet, even though his dad is the headmaster. But
maybe it's I was just going to say maybe it was a more of a comment on the relationship with his dad, that maybe it'd be another thing that would disappoint him or something like that.
I thought it was good, it just felt like it was in a different film, but maybe
the
headmaster is in a different time, so that's okay. He's like holding on to these values more from my school era.
I think things are it's my experience of, like, I guess that sixth form time is, you know, people are fairly open about things, and I do agree with you. It does stand out as the one thing, you know, why wouldn't he just come out?
Yeah. Or maybe he feels with his jock image is that he has to be straight. I don't know.
He doesn't really have any friends, though.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's not like the popular jock who is...
He's not like Jackson.
No, yeah, it's he's a bit of he's a weird character, and I really sympathized with him, but it also feels like he's not able to, I mean, he feels a lot of things, but he's not able to really either express his feelings or just even contemplate them. Like he doesn't, he's a difficult character, I think, to really understand. And that's why this part with him kissing Eric was just weird, because you don't see it coming, which is not saying that it shouldn't be believable, but it came a bit of out of nowhere for me.
I wonder if they'll bring him back in season two.
I hope so, yeah.
Yeah. I did feel really sorry for him, though.
Yeah.
He reminded me, did anyone watch Malcolm in the Middle?
Yes.
He reminded me a bit of Reese.
Brilliant. Yeah, and another kind of, I thought, quite a strong performance. And again, he's only ever been in, the actor Connor Swindles has only ever been in one episode of Jamestown and one episode of Harlot. So again, some good casting there, finding some good young talent. And then are there any of the other like school kids you want to talk about? Maybe Jackson, I guess, is interesting. Played by Kedar William Sterling, with the two gay mums who are potentially on the verge of divorce and feeling pressured to swim and be the jock in love with Maeve. Really interesting character, because he's actually more sensitive than you might think for a jock. I don't know.
I think the final episode he did quite a nice thing with the whole going back on the swim team in exchange for Maeve getting left off the hook.
Yeah, what a hero.
Didn't work out, though.
No, it didn't work out. He's actually got
too much of a hero.
Yeah, he's got a longer CV, so he's got a bit more acting experience. But yeah, no, I thought that was a nice performance. It did remind me a lot of the Jock and She's All That. He's got a heart of gold in the end. How did you feel about the little cool trio?
The cool kids.
I don't know if I would call them cool, but yeah.
Self-appointed cool kids, maybe.
Yeah.
We have our air quotes up.
Yeah, exactly.
They're terrible.
The sort of Greek chorus of, yeah. I mean, because that's a very standard thing, isn't it? Sort of little clique. Anvar. But I think unusual to have the cool kids led by the gay boy. So that's kind of a nice... maybe indication that in the new, more sort of modern liberal time, that the person who traditionally, like, I'm thinking of what is the equivalent of Sex Education that I watched when I was the age of people watching this now, and it was probably My So-Called Life. And there, the guy, you know, it was about the three outcasts in the school who definitely weren't cool. And, you know, it was two girls and the gay guy. And they would never have been the mainstream kind of self-appointed high fashion people. So I thought, this is actually really nice, because now it's not a thing where it would have been when I was watching TV in the early 90s. So I kind of felt the world has improved in some way.
Yay.
Yay.
Well, thank God. Yeah. They were terrible, the three of them. We don't know very much about them, but they are very one-dimensional at this point.
Yeah, and will probably stay that way. I mean, that's their role, isn't it?
Definitely.
Something for our heroes to sort of rally against.
It makes you ask some interesting questions, like, do people like who are horrible like that Ruby girl, and also the abortion protesters, you know, do they also deserve the help from people? You know, he did it in the end. He helped everyone.
Yeah, that was weird, right? The whole abortion clinic thing.
Yeah.
Does that happen in England? Do people protest abortion clinics?
Yeah.
Well, like that was just an American thing.
No. They do it here too.
Really?
That's horrible. Bastard.
Yeah. Like, whether or not you think abortion is or isn't right, like, it just strikes me as having a go at women when they're, like, arguably the most vulnerable is just really mean.
Yeah.
Better ways to protest it, although it was quite a kind of funny, quirky, bizarre...
And she ended it as well. What was it? Are you gonna shout at my friend? And they were like, yeah, probably.
Yeah.
No, he just solved their relationship problem and showed them that he was a nice guy,
which in a sense is better, right? It's more credible.
Definitely. It's also another one of those things where it's like, it's a difficult subject. You actually see people just harassing poor women who decided to get an abortion, and there's still some funny bits in this.
I mean, again, like, you know, this was another issue they were tackling, as well as the homophobic abuse of Eric that was just so kind of like hardcore, and then to have it as kind of like this weird first date where he's picking her up afterwards was like, in another person's hand, this could have been an absolute clusterfuck of a storyline.
Well, it was another one of those classic cliches, you know, we all saw it coming. You know, he thinks, oh, she's asking me out on a date, but it's the worst thing. It's her getting an abortion, and it's, you know, it's really sweet on one hand that she trusts him and wants him to be there. But he's also completely misread the situation. It's crazy. I loved this the character, the older lady who was in the abortion
clinic. Who was acting all like hardcore and
sort of, But no, she was, and then she was really sweet, you know, held the girls' hands and they were all scared and she made them laugh. I thought that was a really touching scene.
Yeah, when they share the dessert at the end, like, have you got the chocolate one? That was kind of a, that's what I like about this show, that even though it's kind of silly and bizarre and unreal and fantastic, there are these like really nice, authentic little quiet moments where it's just very touching and moving.
Yeah, the interactions between the characters can be very, very real and very, very moving.
Should we move on to the mum, the sex therapist?
Oh, of course. We haven't mentioned her yet.
She was actually the main reason I watched the show, because I love Gillian Anderson, and I just love her in her really super posh English accent with the platinum blonde hair, being all kind of like, oh, you know, are you all going to be doing drugs tonight? Well, you know, just make sure you use the buddy system. I mean, I don't think you can get anything like that's more opposite to what my parents were like at that age, but I just, you can imagine it must just be so cringe and excruciating. And I can definitely relate to that thing where all of your friends think your mum's really cool and you're just like, no, she's not, she's just cringe.
She's great.
But quite, how did you find it? I guess you can talk about it in two ways, her relationship with her ex-husband and then the relationship with the plumber. How did you find her as a character standalone and then in relationship to the men in her life?
I liked her, but she's a massive hypocrite and she has a weird relationship with both her son and men in general.
She seems to sort of abuse like the power granted in the roles she's given, like whether it's as Otis's mother or as therapist or as employer of plumbers.
Yeah, I mean, I have a real massive problem, and I've have done for years with Hollywood in particular, where they make these rom-coms about hard-nosed, get-ahead professional women who are successful in everything but terrible at their love life, and then, you know, along comes the working class guy who's going to melt their heart and be all unconventional and not what they're looking for. So this is just yet another one of the cliches they're exploring here. I mean, I really like the actress and the actor, but I found myself like a bit kind of like blurg. And then, you know, when Otis starts like fancying the plumber's daughter, I thought that was like a much nicer relationship. So I was like, really, as a mum, would you still date someone if you knew that your son was interested in the daughter? Would you not think that was weird?
The relationship with the plumber is a bit awkward. You're like, what? Just talk. Like, what's going on? But really sweet at the same time. She is so cringy, and you're like, oh, please don't say that. Don't do that. You understand why Otis reacts in the way he does, because like, this is mortifying. It's also very real when she explains that he is the main thing in her life, and it's hard for her to see him get farther away from her. Like, it's very cliche, it's very easy, it's like basically what I guess most moms feel, but still.
I also found it, I agree with all of that, but I also found it kind of weird that I know her ex-husband goads her into it because he writes the book and he really twists the knife. But that final revelation that she's betrayed her son by writing up about his sex life for her next book just actually didn't feel credible to me, because I thought the one nice thing about that relationship is I really thought the two of them loved each other, the son and the mother. And like, you really see that when he goes to that all-night party and she kind of like follows him because she's being overprotective. And it was just so believable to me. And like, even though she's aware of it and she knows this is the worst thing to do when she's become that overbearing mum, it just felt so real. And I thought, actually, a woman like that, even if her ex-husband is a dick, just wouldn't professionally or personally betray her son like that. It just didn't feel right to me.
I think it speaks to her lack of boundaries generally. Like, she just doesn't see that as it's not such a bad thing. It's she's like, well, he's gonna get over it, and
she's very desensitized to sex. Very desensitized to it, and it just doesn't, she doesn't see it in the same way that he does, as someone going through this all for the first time.
But she's also aware that he feels about it differently to her, right?
Yeah, and it's a bit of her job too to like understand and help. I mean, she should know what it is to go through this for the first time and to yeah.
Because I think how far you believe she knows it's going to hurt her son will really influence how far you think that final decision is a real betrayal and whether you still like the character, right? So I think I'm probably, it sounds like I'm coming down on her a bit more harshly because I think she does know, but it's just that the ex-husband just gets to her in a way that drives her crazy, and I think that's very credible in a way, but kind of sad. But I'm interested to see how they handle it in season two, just because I think despite all the craziness in this, we had some really beautiful father-child relationships and some horrible ones, and I think hers notices was lovely. I think Eric and his dad turned out to be really beautiful, and obviously, you know, the headmaster and his son wasn't, but and Maeve and her parents non-existent and not, but I hope they kind of redeem this relationship because I think it's one of the hearts of the show.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Any other topics, subjects, characters, comments, craziness, favorite scenes, lines, moments? Free for all, guys, freestyle it.
Yeah. Well, basically it was just all very funny. Like I expected to be really like embarrassed, and this kind of shows that you're watching but you're like, do I really want to watch that? It's kind of weird, and it's awkward, and I'm awkward at all those sex things, and it wasn't. It's just it wasn't. It's very open. Like everything is said and basically shown as well. I mean, not everything, but it's and it wasn't that awkward, which I liked.
Yeah, it's beautifully put.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely not in the same way that other shows have. I mean, the last show that I watched that was kind of like this was Skins, and that it has a completely different feel from that,
mm-hmm.
which it also felt real in a different way, but the way they handle some of the topics, or just how, you know, just how ignorant you are at that age, I think they handle that really well. I certainly was no idea. You know, I think there's a quote from the writer. She says that all the characters, they don't know what they're doing. You know, even Otis is feeling his way and he blunders through it, and captures how you feel at that age quite well.
Yeah, I hate to tell you, it doesn't necessarily change at my age. Yeah, but I do think, I mean, there was something, I mean, obviously my school experience was like so opposite from this one, but I think it does capture something of that, and that kind of exuberance of youth, and that just that hopefulness forming new friendships, that excitement when you kind of make a new friend at school. There was something really beautiful about it and very mm-hmm. nostalgic for me. Apart from everything, that this show was just a mixtape of my youth. And if you look at that school prom scene, we all wore those dresses. I mean, it's interesting that Maeve and all the girls wear the dresses. We wore those awful dresses and the hair, and we danced to those songs. So it was it was kind of freaky. It was so spot on. I may actually try and dig out a sort of like prom picture from my school, because I think the Maeve dress is literally what I wore. It's just ridiculous. I didn't have pink hair though.
I would have loved to see that, being there with pink hair.
I had electric blue hair at one point, but that was more when I was 19. I had a big panel of electric blue. And when I first moved to London and started working, I had a big panel of brick red, which was really hard to maintain as red.
No, crazy hair. We haven't spoken about how it's like set in the modern era, but kind of not, but kind of is, but kind of not.
Yeah.
Like,
the alarm clocks and I don't know, the decor of all the houses. It's weird. But then everyone has a smartphone, and
it was a weird hybrid of today and when I was in school. It really was. And even the clothes is kind of.
I guess that's why everyone can relate to it.
Yeah, I mean, it's. I can't decide whether I admire it completely because it's an organic idea that Laurie Rose had, or whether this is just a really nasty mechanical computer says X from Netflix. We advise you to do this because it will appeal to the broadest possible demographic.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, to be fair, it works. So if it is.
I kind of associate that to a lot of the shows that I don't exactly know how to describe them, but you were speaking about Skins earlier, and I guess a lot of this kind of weird feeling shows are like it's not really, it's just weird. It's like, you don't feel like it's your reality. And I guess the fact that it's a bit displaced in time goes with that too.
Mm.
Yeah, I think it's the way I would describe this show is it's set like, you know, growing up in provincial England in a very boring school, but watching all the John Hughes movies at the time and watching a lot of American TV. It's set in kind of what my fantasy version of school would have been like when I was 13.
Yeah.
So it would have looked exactly like my school, but kind of like the kind of, yeah, my fantasy version based on what I knew at the time rather than now, which is kind of weird. It actually was freaking me out. It just felt like the writer was living inside my 13-year-old self's imagination for a lot of this. It was very weird. But anyway, and then some of it was just also freaking me out because I was like, is this really what it's like in school now that people have this much sex and they're this open about it and are this kind of like forward? And I thought maybe it is true, and I just felt really old watching it. I was like, shit.
It definitely wasn't like 10 years ago, at least not in my school, not in my circles, which is also a possibility, but it just wasn't like that. And yeah, I said it, high school was 10 years ago.
Yeah, same for me.
Yeah, maybe we need to find a 16-year-old somewhere and ask them.
It was, yeah.
Anything else, like favourite scenes, worst scenes? I don't know, funniest moments?
I like the end of the first episode, where there was just that random guy there, and Otis just came in and said, like, I can't masturbate and I'm fine with that, and then just walked out, and the mother left, and the guy's just still sitting there.
I really like the fact that they ended it not on him maybe getting together with Maeve or the new girl, but on him just successfully wanking. It felt like a beautiful character arc.
Everyone was cheering.
Yeah, it's because like that was his personal journey.
Oh. It reminded me of Trainspot in that scene where just opposite.
I don't remember the first one being like taking a tab of acid, but maybe for him because. Because of everything.
But no,
Well, a lot of the confrontation scenes were great. Like when Jackson confronts his mums, when Eric confronts Otis, or even when Otis confronts his mum after finding the book.
Yeah. And I think also Maeve and Otis just work very well with each other. Like,
yeah.
Their scenes just are great.
Definitely. Oh, we haven't spoken about Maeve's brother. I mean,
Jesus, weird, he's so weird, feckless.
Weird character. And of course he's the one who sells the drugs to the kid who nearly kills himself.
Yeah,
of course. Where do you think he's going? What do you think he's like running from? Why, you know, I don't get why he left at that time. Do you reckon he's running from the police? Or
he probably just owes someone some money for drugs and hasn't paid them, right? Something like, yeah, like that. I'm sure he'll turn up in a cameo in the next season.
Yeah, for sure.
Mm-hmm. It's kind of funny to me. I've just been on the IMDb page and there are no actual quotes for Sex Education yet, which surprises me because it's so funny, and yet I don't have a single like what isn't cliched is that there aren't like catchphrases in it, or it's like really funny, but there are no kind of zingers or anything that I remember, which is weird.
The cool Asian kid has some brutal zingers sometimes.
Yeah,
I forget his name. I wish they'd gone into his character a bit more when I think it's the final episode after Eric's hit him in the face and they sort of pass each other on the way into school. And he says he had to come out to his mum because of it, and basically told her that Eric was a gay, someone who, you know, beat up gay people. And he, obviously Eric's gay himself. And I thought they could, if they dived into his character more, it would have made him a bit more relatable. But mm-hmm. I guess, you know, got that to look forward to, hopefully.
Mm. Where do you guys think, what do you think will happen in season two?
Otis will definitely find out about his mum and the plumber, and that will probably affect his relationship with Ola.
Yeah, I agree. I like Ola.
I like
She's
her too.
Great, yeah. I didn't realize she was so young. when she first came in as like the plumber's assistant, I thought she was like in her 20s.
Yeah.
And then she turns up at school.
I mean, they all are basically in their 20s, though, aren't they, in real life?
Yeah. I think Eric's 26, his actor. Or Jackson, maybe. They're both in them sort of 23, 24.
I think at some point we have to see Maeve and Otis get together, right? It's kind of... Maybe you don't want to, but that's definitely what I wanted. And it's too easy, you know. It's where the show is leading you and it's what you want to see happening. And then once it happens, if it does, it's just like, meh, why did I want that so much again?
Do you think he'll lose his virginity to her? Is it going to be another cliche?
I hope not. I hope not. I hope they don't go this way.
Yeah.
And do you think we'll ever find out what part of England this is supposed to be?
And indeed Wales.
It looks like my mum grew up in Hereford, which is near the Welsh border.
Yeah.
And it looks a lot like that countryside. You know, the one bus every hour and a half or whatever it is through some like country lane.
That's like every countryside.
So apparently it's filmed in Landogo, Monmouthshire, Wales, Brockway, Gloucestershire, England, Tintern, Chepstow, Monmouthshire, Wales, and Caerleon, Newport, Wales. So it's basically filmed effectively in South Wales. And the school used in the filming of this is the old Caerleon University in South Wales. So yeah, beautiful. It's a really good advert. I mean, the first thing I said to my other half was we need to go on a road trip to that part of England and Wales because it's just beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
Does anyone have anything to say in conclusion on sex education?
I'm definitely going to rewatch this because it was so amazing. I feel like the binge is enough. I'm going to have to binge it again.
Yeah, I'll probably binge it before season 2 comes out. It's like I'm just about to re-binge Deutschland 83 because Deutschland 86 is finally coming out.
Ooh, I never watched that. I imagine you recommend it.
I think it's awesome. It's another song that if you just listen to the mixtape, I actually have a Deutschland 83 iTunes playlist, which is again effectively the songs of my youth. But it's awesome. I'm so excited that's coming back on. So Vassals of Kingsgrave, I hope you enjoyed our slightly chaotic, and not that I didn't plan for this, but I kind of didn't plan for this, hosting of Sex Education season 1. If you haven't watched it, you should definitely watch it because it's a bunch of fun, but also tackle serious issues sensitively. And we hope that you'll all tune in for our season 2 review as when that comes out. In the meantime, thank you very much for listening. My name is Bina. Where can we find you all, guys? Are you all on Twitter or anywhere else people can follow you?
I'm not on the internet.
You're not on the internet. The only way I can get you to fuck is to smoke you out with a bit of anti-Arsenal bants on text message. Nymeria, where can people follow you?
Well, not on Twitter. It's not quite me. It's just my...
You can get me a carrier pigeon.
Yeah, exactly. No, I'm not on Twitter. But on the forums, like everyone else.
See how I set that shit up. So if you want to hang out with Munro Jock, with Nymeria, with Pops88, join the forums of A Podcast of Ice and Fire. And you can chat all things Vok, all things A Song of Ice and Fire, and maybe come on an episode. So thank you all for joining. Bye.
Thanks, Dina.
Thank you, Dina.
I always knew I was bad. Always dreaming, so they called me the spaceman. You first kissed me in your parents' blue basement. Wanted your baby so bad. Sometimes we got out of hand. We bought drugs from a parking attendant. But sober nights in your car were transcendent. Loved you, baby, so bad. You know I loved you so bad.
Let the abuse commence. it's been hard, Bina. Been hard, I'm not going to lie. It's been a tough old season.
So at first, Jock was like, I should like get on tea to join this tonight. And I was like, meh. Because I didn't actually realize, for some reason, I thought you guys were top of the table. I'm not entirely sure why. And then I checked the premier table and realized that we were ahead of you. And I was like, right, game on.
Yeah, and it's been that way for quite some time, and it's probably going to end that way this season.
What, you're not going to do a last spinning at St. Totteringham's Day or whatever you guys call it?
No. It's been 2 years or so. It's the longest in my lifetime.
Why? Please tell the listeners, why are the Gooners so shit?
They're not terrible. We're sitting fifth in the table, 1 point behind fourth. There's hope yet.
I mean, points wise, we're only about 2 points ahead of you, right? I mean, it's very tight in that top.
No, you're way ahead. You're.
Are we?
Yeah. You're. There's.
Do you like how I'm suckering you into praising Spurs?
Yeah. I'm quite gullible. I've had my head in books all day, so I've not had any human contact.
Bless. But what is it? Is it just you don't have the money to buy players, or you've got the players and they're not performing? What's going on?
We could do a whole hour on this. The owners are awful. Well, he doesn't put a penny into the club, takes money out every year, won't give the manager enough money to make his mark on the team. You know, he's basically inherited a team and he's had to apply his own, you know, he's inherited a team that has been drilled in a certain way, and he's not had any real investment in it to mould it into what he, you know, to his football values and his way of playing.
Yeah. Do you think in retrospect it was unwise to get rid of Wenger, knowing that you weren't going to have the money to allow someone else to create their own vision?
No, because, you know, we had to make that change at some point and things weren't going well. And, you know, anyone who thought that getting rid of him and bringing in some bloke is going to turn it all around and we'll be winning the Premier League is a fool, because it's more than just the manager. It's not one man. It's all the behind the scenes stuff. You know, it's why Aaron Ramsey is leaving on a free contract this year and we're not getting a penny. It's why Danny Welbeck's left. It's why Sanchez left on a contract. All these situations, you know, for years, it's not just Wenger, because it's still happening.
Mm.
So
I feel, you know, sad. This is not bringing me joy as a Spurs fan. Because you sound so demoralised. It's just, oh.
Well, yeah. After losing 1-0 to Bartek Borisov last week, where I arranged to leave work early because it's a 6 o'clock kickoff, ran home from work sweating, boasting to everyone about how we're going to win the Europa League, and we lose 1-0 to the worst team in it.
a team that I think the collective listeners of Oka are going, who?
Yeah.
The Vikram Solanke of UEFA League. We've been watching the England West Indies ODI today, and they cut away in the lunch interval, and they had three people doing a bit of commentary in the studio. So there's Wardy, there's Rob Key. Actually, no, it wasn't Rob Key, it's Tresco. And some guy in the middle. I was just shouting at the TV, like, no offence, but who the fuck are you? Turns out some just random, well-spoken Asian bloke, bit balding. And then it turned out it was Vikram Solanke. I was like, seriously, like, some rando. I just never even knew what he looked like. Some rando county cricket player from, like, the 90s. And that's who you lost to. You basically lost to the footballing version of Vikram Solanke.
Yeah, but I was there last night to watch the triumphant return, the 3-0 reverse, and we march on. That's all that matters.
Well, you know, you'll do better in UEFA than we did in Champions League. Do you think you'll make it into Champions League this year?
I don't know. But we've got a good chance in Europa League. Not too many tough teams. And the Premier League, I don't know. It's between us and United for fourth place. Hmm. And they've just got Ole Gunnar Solskjaer as their manager. And he's frustratingly hard to beat.
So, say that name again.
Ole Gunnar Solskjaer.
He's like the Venkatara governor of football, isn't he? He's like the guy that if you know how to pronounce his name, you feel like vaguely smug. It's a really lovely name. It trips off the tongue. It's a bit like hullabaloo. I love that word. Hullabaloo.
Hullabaloo. Oh. Well, how's your stadium been coming along? I hear it's not going too well over there.
Does it matter? Is it not appropriate that a team that's going to win the Premier League is playing at Wembley?
You think you're going to win the Premier League?
I don't think we're going to win the Premier League, but I just think it's weak, because that's all that Gunners can do. Like, I'm just surrounded by Gunners. You know, I'm marrying a Gunner, my best friend's a Gunner, everyone at work's a Gunner. And because they can't actually say anything about the football, they go on about the real estate. And it's like, if you've got to take it to the real estate, that's bad bands.
Well, I know, but you've got a short memory, because Spurs fans were doing it about 12 years ago when we moved to our new ground.
I have to admit, the Emirates is nice. Our ground is going to be lovely. It's just not quite ready yet. Anyway.
I've got to send you a David Squires. Do you know who he is? He writes, I think he's for The Guardian, does like a football comic strip every week.
Cool.
And it's really good. He did some fantastic World Cup ones. And he, does a better job at mocking Spurs than I could do.
Oh, feel free to send any cyber abuse through. What can I say? But anyway, no, I'm sad to see you that demoralised. That's not nice. I hope you do well, but I hope we do slightly better.
You'll probably get your wish.
I know.
Let the abuse commence. Let the abuse commence. I used to have hair down to my shoulders when I was that age.
Really? I think everyone should send me the most embarrassing photo of themselves in the sex, like high school years, and I'll post it. And I will do the same. I promise you, I will also do the same. And that'll be hilarious.
I'll just show you guys my driver license.
Really?
I don't think I don't have many photos from that. So yeah, she said. That time.
So she says. So Noah, yeah. who was inspiring you? Were you trying to be Dave Lee Roth? I mean, what was going on with the long hair?
No, I don't know. My mates started growing their hair long, so I just followed like a complete sheep. but I loved it, and it stuck. And then I shaved my head one day and never grew it long again.
Brilliant.
But yeah, it's my license, and I do get turned down sometimes, or have to argue with bouncers to get in places because I look so completely different now.
Aww.
When I was in secondary school, my dad, I think that was the time, yeah. Anyway, when George Bush was president of the US, he started growing his hair in like a kind of a protest, like saying, I'm going to keep growing my hair until like he's not president anymore. and everyone thought,
Jesus, what's he doing for Trump now if he did that for Bush?
Nothing, actually. Yeah, even Bush, he kind of gave up at some point. Yeah.